Okay, I don't have a PowerPoint presentation, which I think is a really good thing, because my presentation will be the only one you'll remember. It'll be the one without the PowerPoint presentation. So I want to, because of the time frame, I always think my goal is always to present a couple of ideas, and then you can do with those as you see fit, as opposed to presenting a whole bunch of information. And specifically, I want to talk a little bit about my current interest in the way in which we support young people who live in residential group care in their education. And sort of by way of context, I've really become interested in that because after many years, about 20, 25 years now, of walking in and out of group homes in Ontario in particular, but also in other places around the world, I can't help but think that, you know, the rhetoric certainly has changed, and maybe you have some different frameworks and different theories and different ideas, but the day-to-day practice, the day-to-day feeling of being in a residential group care program, for me at least, hasn't really changed very profoundly. There is there are differences across the spectrum, but overall, I suspect that not all that much has changed, especially in terms of the experience that young people might have living there. And given that, well, we can make many claims about residential group care, and I don't want to be negative about it at all, but given that one claim that we cannot make is that we have achieved spectacular outcomes anywhere in the world, it's probably useful to think about that a little bit and to start thinking about maybe the whole approach to how we do this just doesn't meet what is required these days. It's a question whether it's ever met that, but, you know, let's think about these days at least. And so education became a good way of starting to think about that for a number of reasons, one of which is that everybody's thinking about education right now and educational outcomes for kids in care in particular. But and one good reason to do that, of course, is because education is well known as a core factor in terms of developing a sustainable plan for independence and for being independent and for reaching some goals as you go through adulthood. So it seems reasonable enough to focus on that. But what I find even more startling is that to the extent that there is empirical literature on this, education is also found to be actually a very significant factor in mental health improvements for young people. In fact, in several studies that have been done, a more significant factor than psychotherapeutic interventions, all kinds of different family therapies, all kinds of different and frankly far more expensive approaches. One study in particular, that was done a while ago now and had its limitations, but nevertheless, a study done in New York City in sort of what they called an at-risk neighborhood, compared the outcomes for young people who, whereby one group received 1 hour a week of tutoring on the part of a volunteer, one group received psychotherapeutic interventions on the part of a privately hired therapist using a range of therapeutic modalities, and one group was a control group. And it was the group with the tutor that made the greatest improvements in terms of some fairly standard mental health measures after a year of intervention. I find that kind of stuff quite startling in many ways, because we have come to rely significantly, I think, on the power of our sort of more clinically oriented interventions. Certainly in North America, the word clinical and the word treatment are really what define residential care and many other sorts of interventions for young people who are facing some adversity. So I find that very interesting, and maybe education is something we need to think about a little more and need to think about not only in terms of schooling, but perhaps in broader terms and in other ways. One thing that strikes me as particularly important is that it is not so much what happens in school that impacts the educational outcome of young people. It is really what happens at home that impacts the educational outcomes for young people. And yet in Ontario, at least, the vast majority of initiatives and the vast majority of investment in terms of time and resources goes into finding the right placement, school placement for a young person, and hoping that that will do the trick. And it's not doing the trick, quite clearly. So I became interested in looking at what exactly is it that we do that would support the education in the home environment of a residential group care program. And I did a little research project on that. Actually, I devoted 2 years to it. It wasn't that little. But what I was especially interested in were the foundations that we provide for practitioners to support young people every day in their learning, both globally, as well as more school-focused learning in terms of getting better grades at school, essentially. And what I found was not entirely surprising, but it's worthwhile mentioning so that you can think about it for a little bit. I looked at it from a number of different perspectives. I examined the policy and procedure manuals of residential group care programs from across the province. And in Ontario, at least, those manuals are basically the, you know, the instruction manual for how the program is going to work. It has human resource components. It covers everything about the program. I interviewed people in charge of agencies, and I also interviewed staff members from agencies. And then I also administered a survey to kids to see what their thoughts were. And then finally, I did a whole bunch of site visits, 30 to be specific, to look at what people actually do and what things look like and so on. And what I found in brief is that in terms of the policies and procedures, these are usually, I would say, about 300-page documents to cover everything they have to cover in terms of licensing requirements and so on. On average, one paragraph was devoted toward the support of education for the kids while they're at home. There were sometimes larger sections about education in terms of what to do when a kid is suspended, and there were some instructions about how they're going to be in the room for a while and those kinds of things. But in terms of actually supporting young people in their learning, a paragraph. That was the typical thing out of 300 pages. I also was very interested in sort of the human resource component of all of this. And I noted that in Ontario, at least, the pre-service qualifications to work in a residential group care program at the best of times is child and youth care practice. Note that that's not really a required qualification, but in many cases, people try to hire child and youth workers. And since I teach child and youth care practice, I know that the curriculum of child and youth care practice, whether it's at the college or at the university, doesn't actually teach practitioners on how to help people in their education. It teaches all kinds of other stuff, and it's all good stuff, but it does none of that. I also noticed that when agencies recruit child and youth workers, helping kids in their education doesn't come up. It's not on the job on the job posting. It's not a question in the interviews that are being conducted. It's also not a part of the orientation process. In other words, in general, people are not oriented toward the educational support a young person or a group of young people might need, and so on. So it never actually, it doesn't come up. It's just not something that is talked about until you're actually working every day, and sometimes you might think of it yourself. I found that somewhat startling, actually. In terms of the interviews with the managers, I was really fascinated to learn that almost every manager I interviewed was very clear that education is super important, and that, of course, as an agency, we're committed to getting kids, you know, the best possible outcomes. But of course, it's not as important as treatment. That was invariably the response. So ultimately, in order to be successful in their education, first they have to be stable behaviorally. And then secondarily, they have to have their sort of social and psychological needs met. And so that was a very, you know, after a lengthy conversation about the celebration of the importance of education, we were back to treatment in no time at all. And I found that when I interviewed staff, I got pretty much the same response from staff, a little bit different in terms of intention. In other words, staff were more interested in doing something on a day-to-day basis, but not necessarily in terms of the permission they felt to do that. In fact, quite to the contrary, staff felt and knew that the emphasis was really on more clinical goals and more treatment-oriented initiatives. Staff also talked about not having the time on shift. Is this thing still on? Or can I put it on?
Yeah, being asked to
time. Okay. Staff also really talked about just feeling they don't have the time to support kids in their education by the time they do everything else. You know, dinner on the table, chores have to get done, evening programming, whether it's recreational, whatever it might be, and then bedtime. There's just no time. And so the idea of integrating and organically supporting kids in their education while doing the work, that actually is the work, that just wasn't there. And by the way, I did some of the agencies that participated in this process were, at least in my view, some really good agencies. Like, so I didn't go looking for a lack of activity. It was in some of the good agencies that I just didn't find any activity. Kids, too, were quite consistent in their responses around this and almost invariably talked about that they felt very good about their context and particularly their relationships with staff. So in general, you know, it wasn't a matter that the whole place was dysfunctional or anything. In fact, kids felt pretty good about where they were at. But when asked specifically about things that happen in the program on a day-to-day basis that might be supportive of their learning, they identified virtually nothing. Except once in a while, every program in Ontario, sometime either before dinner or right after, has something called either homework hour or quiet hour or something like that, where kids are asked to, you know, do their homework or be quiet. In the better programs, it might be the former. In the not-so-good programs, it becomes the latter. But other than that, kids identified very little assistance and very little culture around supporting education. So in other words, I asked things like, you know, do the staff ask you what happened at school today when you come home? And some of them said, yes, they say, how was school? And then I say, it was fine, and then the conversation is over. So that's the end of that, ticked off. So the kids were really clear that education is not a focus, they're not experiencing support for education as a significant focus in their time living in a residential group care program. And then finally, I also did these site visits, and what I was looking for in particular during the site visits was recognizing that most group programs really have quite a significant diversity within their child population, with different sorts of learners and kids of different ages and so on. One would expect a really education-focused place or learning-focused place to provide different sorts of physical opportunities for learning. Some kids really want a more common area to study or to read something. Other kids need some real privacy. There's often issues around internet connections and that kind of stuff. And I found that, once again, in terms of the physical design of programs, there is no conscious provision for any of that. In the vast majority of cases, because group homes in Ontario are usually very community-based, it's just a house in the neighborhood, basically, in most of those places, there's simply not enough space. And even in those places that are a little more, that were built to be group care operations, essentially, the emphasis, there clearly was no conscious design to meet the different learning needs or learning opportunities that kids might have. So the conclusion that I just had to come to and wasn't happy to come to is that when it comes to understanding how to link support for the learning, for kids' learning stuff, that is certainly not culturally embedded in our residential group care system. I can say that with great confidence about Ontario. I can say it with some confidence about much of the rest of the world. And I think that's extremely worrisome. I will note also that in terms of the policy and the legislative level, there has, of course, been a huge, huge effort being made on improving the post-secondary educational prospects of kids leaving care. So in other words, there's lots of investment in scholarships, in access to colleges and universities, and so on. And some kids have really benefited from that. But of course, all the other kids who really never graduate from high school and therefore are generally not eligible for post-secondary education never really have the opportunity to even contemplate benefiting from that. So that's a big issue. I think one of the things I think about a lot now, so kind of as the follow-up to this, is the deception that we are essentially engaged in, I think, with our young people. Because I think what we're doing is we're saying to young people on a good day, we might be saying to young people, look, if you follow the program and you work hard and you go to all your appointments and you do all of those things, you will do better and then you will be eligible for employment and your life has some real prospects and that'll be good news. But I'm not sure that the world is that way anymore. The reality is, you know, when we look around the world, we know that youth unemployment at the best of times is huge, that the kinds of jobs that young people used to enter as a way of building a career are by and large gone, and that young people who rely on sort of on being recognized for having potential rather than for being job ready are at even greater disadvantage than those young people who can immediately present themselves as job ready. And so I really worry that in saying to kids, just conform and comply, you'll be fine, that may not be entirely accurate. In fact, I think it's not accurate at all. So the next project I want to do, or the follow-up project I want to do, is I'm very interested in using what the kids definitely do have, which is the ability to deal with adversity, which is experience in dealing with unpredictability, which is the ability to form relationships for instrumental reasons, not always for emotionally satisfying reasons, but to use those kinds of skills to enter a world that perhaps is more focused on entrepreneurial skills rather than traditional job market skills that we're currently, I think, pushing at kids without them actually being there. There you go. Wow, that was a real downer. Eh? I wanted to have a couple of more positive messages than that, but there you go. A couple of ideas for you to think about. That's all I got. Any questions, comments?
We have a few minutes if people have comments or questions.
Do you want me to just share to that?
You know what? I can give you this because
then it gets recorded. Yes.
Go ahead.
Interested in your views on the educational attainment of the actual staff members and whether that has any bearing on their attitude towards promoting better educational outcomes for the young people themselves.
I think it's less the level of educational attainment of staff members. I think it's more the culture that we promote. And, you know, it's very clear to me that at least in Ontario, and I emphasize that, you know, that's what I know about the most, that especially frontline child and youth workers simply are not told at any point in coming to be in front of kids that supporting their education at home is important. It just doesn't happen. Of course, there are sometimes sort of program exceptions. You know, sometimes a group of people get together and they so happen to feel like it's really important. And then good things happen for a while, but it's not embedded in the system. Right? So there is just no culture of education. It's just not there. There is, however, a very pronounced culture of conformity, of behavior management, even though we have better words to describe that kind of stuff now, and of compliance.
I have to go, so.